Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Healthcare, next year's major political battle in Sacramento. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. What costs billions of dollars a year and has something for everybody to hate? Almost any plan for reforming health care in California. Senate Democrats have unveiled their ideas, Assembly Democrats will be next, and Governor Schwarzenegger has plans to make good on a campaign promise. Tonight, what's proposed and what might be possible? On Reporter's Notebook, will the Chandler family buy back the L.A. Times or not? First, here's the news. Warman Alney back with Which Way L.A. on KCRW. Employer mandates, worker contributions, insurance reform, just some of the elements of health care reforms in Sacramento. Tonight, a preview of next year's biggest political battle. First, this story. Today's Daily News reports that Los Angeles City Hall is outraged over the firing of a dozen workers by new owners of the Four Points Sheraton Hotel near Los Angeles International Airport. On December 30th, the Four Points will be one of the hotels covered by a new living wage ordinance passed by the City Council. Councilmember Janice Hahn led the fight for the ordinance. Welcome, as always, to our program.
Thank you, Warren. It's good to be with you.
Are you among those who are outraged?
I am. I'm offended. I'm outraged. I'm incensed. It was just really a very cruel position for this hotel to take. They changed ownership, and the first thing they did was fire 12 workers a few weeks before Christmas. If there ever was a modern-day Scrooge, it's the Four Points Hotel.
Are these workers who had been there for a while?
Yes. I spoke to several of them last night. One of them had been there 20 years. One had been there 12 years. One had been there 8 years. We're talking about some loyal employees to Four Points. So for them to do this, you know, right before our law takes effect, again, is very mean-spirited. And coincidentally, these workers certainly had been very active and vocal in our living wage ordinance here in the city of Los Angeles.
Well, if your ordinance had gone into effect, would they have been able to do this at all?
No, because one of the things, besides the living wage ordinance, we passed another ordinance signed by the mayor that said if a hotel changes ownership, changes names, sells, merges, that the hotel workers must be kept for 90 days before they could do anything. So they kind of sort of snuck this in before our law took effect.
As you are well aware, we're talking with Janice Hahn, the councilwoman in Los Angeles. The district includes Watts and San Pedro, but she's also the sponsor of this legislation having to do with hotels near LAX. As you know, they're trying to qualify a referendum, the hotels, including Four Points, that would repeal this measure. What is the justification for singling out some businesses for the living wage ordinance and not others?
Well, the city attorney of Los Angeles told us that we could impose a living wage on about 3,500 hotel workers who work in the hotels along the Century Boulevard corridor because the hotels derive a direct benefit from the economic engine, which is owned by Los Angeles, which is the LA International Airport. Those hotels exist and benefit and have a higher occupancy rate than almost any other hotel in the city because they're right next to the airport. And the millions of visitors that come to Los Angeles that come through our airport stay in those hotels. So we could legally challenge their ability to make a decent wage. So our city attorney told us it would be upheld in court. We're not spreading this to any other hotel anywhere in the city of Los Angeles, but this one benefits from the volume of passengers that come through our airport.
So even though you don't have contracts with the hotels, which otherwise would give you the power to do this, because of this benefit, the city attorney is telling you that you have the authority.
Exactly. And we're looking to do several things along the Century Boulevard corridor. We're looking to reduce crime, to improve landscaping. We're looking to build a mini conference center at the Century Boulevard corridor. But we also think the workers ought to be paid a decent living wage and not be afraid that they're going to be fired if the hotel changes names. We want stability in those hotels because I've been told that some of the visitors to Los Angeles come back to those hotels specifically time and time again because of the treatment, the good treatment they get from many of those hotel workers.
Now, if or when your ordinance goes into effect on the 30th, mm-hmm. The minimum wage for these people will be $10.64 an hour. If they have also get health insurance,
right.
$9.39 if they don't. What is it now?
Well, they're now, you know, probably just the minimum wage, which is about $7.50, I think. But, you know, even bringing it up to $9 or $10 is really the federal government's definition of poverty. So we're basically bringing people up to the federal government's definition of poverty, even at $10 an hour. So we're not talking about a large amount, but we think that ought to be the base pay. We've talked to hotel workers who've been there like 17 years. They started at $7, and now they're making $11. So, you know, that's a lot of years of hard work to be have only made you know, about $4 more a year. I just don't think people who work hard should be poor, and this is something we could do to change that.
As you mentioned yourself, the Hotel Workers Union has been very active in this regard. A fast just ended yesterday, the day of Our Lady of Guadalupe. People say you and other council members are too close to the unions. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, I don't look at us being too close to the unions. I look at being close to people. And when I've been out there personally meeting with these workers, I was there visiting them when they're fasting. I've met them, their families. I feel it's not really as much about the union as it is about the working poor in Los Angeles.
Once again, Four Point Sheraton is trying to qualify a referendum to repeal the living wage ordinance. We'll talk to them at some point in the future. Meantime, Janice Hahn, as always, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Warren.
Los Angeles City Councilwoman. I'll be right back with Which Way L.A.?
You're listening to Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Warren Olney also hosts To the Point about issues of national concern. Weekdays at noon on KCRW, distributed nationwide by Public Radio International.
Warren Olney back with Which Way LA. Governor Schwarzenegger and the Democrats, doctors and hospitals, consumer groups and insurance companies, just some of the players with different ideas about health care reform in California. The first salvo in next year's political shooting match comes from Senate Democrats led by President Pro Tem Don Parada. His plan would mandate that companies cover their employees, and those that did not would have to contribute, along with their workers, to a fund administered by a state agency. Anthony Wright is executive director of Health Access California, which advocates for consumers. Anthony Wright, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Before I ask you about the details of any proposals, why is it that health care reform is going to be such a big issue in Sacramento next year?
Well, I think it's multiple reasons. One is just that California has so many uninsured. We have over 6 to 7 million uninsured out of our 35 million population. Californians are more likely to be uninsured than residents of all but four other states in the nation. And we see healthcare costs rising, which is further exacerbating the problem as more people are feeling that they're underinsured, that their healthcare is not going to be there for them when they need it. And so this has risen to the top of the political agenda because there is so much concern, not only from the uninsured, but from people who have insurance but are worried that it's not going to be there when they need it.
Are there statistics that show what the outcomes are, how different they are for people who are insured and those who are not?
Absolutely. The Institute of Medicine, for example, had a series of studies just a year ago of reviewing all the academic literature, and it was unequivocal. People who are uninsured live sicker, die younger, are one emergency away from financial ruin. There are real health and financial consequences to being uninsured, to being underinsured, and that's why, you know, this is not just an individual problem or a health problem. This is a community problem and an economic problem. That, you know, one of the fascinating effects is that medical debt, medical problems, and medical bills are in fact the leading cause of personal bankruptcy. So I think that this is something that we have to solve as a society for the good of not only our community but our economy.
All right. Along comes Don Parada. His plan has what's referred to as an employer mandate in it. Do you support that?
Yes, we certainly support the notion that there should be some protection for the people, for the benefit, for the benefits that people get on the job. That we, it is simply, you know, most Californians get their health coverage on the job. About 18, 19 million Californians do, over half. But it's harder for employers to do so when some of their competitors may not provide health coverage and thus can undercut them on cost. You know, there are other states that have much higher employer-based coverage because there's a culture of providing coverage to their workers. In California, it's actually the opposite. There's actually more of a culture of not providing coverage to your workers, and so you need to set a minimum standard for on-the-job benefits, or we end up in a death spiral where not only even the people, even the employers who want to provide coverage to their workers find that they can't because they simply can't compete with those that don't.
Anthony Wright, Executive Director of Health Access California, a consumer advocacy organization. Michael Shaw is Assistant State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. That's a group representing small employers. Mr. Shaw, welcome to you.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
What does small employer mean?
Well, small employer, you know, is varying definition, but, you know, you look at businesses in around the 50-employee range with fairly low gross revenues, you know, somewhere roughly $500,000 or less per year. The major challenge that they face in healthcare, as Mr. Wright pointed out rightly, is affordability. In fact, we know that you know approximately 40% of small employers do offer healthcare to their employees, which that number has you know been reduced over the years as premiums have risen at double-digit rates.
Well, he says that if you had this mandate in California, then there would no longer be an advantage to those companies that don't offer insurance as opposed to those who do. What do you say to that, or do you oppose the idea of an employer mandate?
Oh, we absolutely, NFIB absolutely opposes the idea of an employer mandate of any kind. I think it's a bit of a fallacy to say that businesses that don't offer health care insurance somehow economically benefit from that fact. In fact, I think it's more accurate to say that they, to some degree, are less advantaged because they don't offer those benefits and they're unable, therefore, to attract better employees, better qualified employees. That would certainly make their business more successful, more profitable. We know that when employees are out looking for jobs, as part of that compensation package, they're looking at the benefits, the voluntary part of things that includes healthcare insurance, and that's an important factor in recruiting and retaining the highest quality employees. In California, with a variety of industries that are on the cutting edge of technology, that's pretty vital to success of any small business.
Okay, we're talking at the beginning of what will be a very long and contentious process. Many elements will be involved. We've got one pro, one con for employer mandates. And Michael Shaw with the National Federation of Independent Business, what's an element of this process that you approve of?
Well, I think the element of the healthcare reform process is that the governor's made this a serious discussion this year. You know, in the previous years, we've seen proposals, Senator Kuehl's SB 840, the single-payer system, that was not a serious part of the debate, at least in terms of options that were possible.
It did pass the legislature, although the governor vetoed it.
It did pass the legislature, but I think that was more of an election year, attempt to jam the governor. Hmm. What we're seeing now is a more serious discussion. The governor called all the various groups to the table in July of this year. And has brought, you know, some greatly varying opinions into his mix of advisors. And so we're encouraged by that fact and look forward to continuing our work with the governor's office and with the legislature, of course.
Well, are you just waiting for him to propose something, or is there some specific proposal you can make now I can get Mr. Wright to respond to?
Well, we are working in the process of developing a proposal that's not available yet. We are, intrigued to see what the governor has set to propose here. You know, potentially we'll certainly hear more about that on January 9th. But with some of the factors that we are looking for, primarily targeting the issues of affordability, you know, looking at the factors that affect the rising costs in the healthcare system that lead to the higher premiums for insurance, Look at the benefit mandates. You know, let's find what is essential to improving and maintaining good health for Californians across the state. Look at the costs relating to the hospital arena, pharmaceuticals, and other areas that contribute to the higher premiums in California, the double-digit increases. Let's look at affordability because, you know, what we know from our surveys of small business owners in the state of California and across the nation, the bar isn't, you know, greed or desire for more profit. It's affordability.
Okay. Michael Cho, again, with the National Federation of Independent Business. Anthony, right back to you with Health Access California. What's sort of the minimum that you think is possible this year?
I'd rather not talk about minimums. I'd rather talk about maximums. I'd rather talk about the fact that we have a shot here to try to cover all Californians and try to deal with the costs as well. One thing I will respond to is that, you know, we don't think that the way to make health care more affordable is to give people less health care. You know, as a suggestion that we either roll back, you know, certain benefits that people have or impose more cost sharing on them with regard to, you know, with regard to high deductibles or cost sharing or things like that. So, I mean, I think that's a piece. But I do think that, you know, there's a potential to create the foundation for an actual healthcare system because right now we have a patchwork. We have a patchwork of employer-based coverage that about a half of Californians get, public insurance programs which cover about another third, but that leaves an awful lot of people who are uninsured. And let me just be clear, you know, 80% of the uninsured are in working families, are workers or family members of workers. And these are people who work hard, play by the rules, pay their taxes, and should have health care and don't.
Michael Shaw, back to you. You said that people are getting serious this year. What do you think are really the chances of getting a consensus on health care reform?
Well, I don't think we're going to see something that Mr. Wright envisions in terms of the, you know, the maximums. But I think what we will see are some significant changes to the healthcare system. I mean, the governor has, you know, expressed interest in individual responsibility, affordability, high tech involved in the healthcare arena. I think we'll see a lot of action around those areas. The employer mandate is certainly something that small businesses in the employer community in general do not agree with. And
okay,
that
let me interrupt you. The governor says that he said two things. He said he wants to cover half the uninsured. Then he said on Meet the Press he wants to cover all the uninsured. You're waiting for him to make a proposal. What do you think he's going to come down on that issue, Michael Shaw?
Well, I think that ultimately it's going to be difficult to get to all, or nearly impossible to get to all of the uninsured. Without a state-run universal system. And so that being off the table, I think what the governor's going to look at is targeting a majority on the uninsured.
Okay, Anthony Wright, for you, is a universal health care system off the table?
It's not for us. I mean, the governor has certainly indicated that he is not inclined toward Senator Kuehl's proposal for a universal single-payer health care system. But, you know, Senator Kuehl has reproposed that bill, and we're very, very much looking forward to continuing to work with her on that. But I do think that there's ways that we can, expand and build on what works in our health care system, which is through, you know, the employer-based coverage that many people now enjoy and want to protect, through public insurance programs like Medi-Cal and Medicare, trying to fix the individual insurance market, for example, where people are denied coverage because of pre-existing conditions. You know, there's a lot of things we can do to fix our healthcare system, and we're hopeful that we can get this done. As the governor will also have to work with the legislature to put something together.
And Michael Shaw, finally to you, the Republicans don't have a lot of clout in Sacramento, except for the governor, who seems not necessarily to be in agreement with his own party. How much do you think that will play a role in whatever happens next year?
Well, I think it'll play a significant role. The interests of small business don't rest with one party or the other. They're nonpartisan. But what we do need to see is serious action on both sides of the aisle towards resolving this issue. As Mr. Wright's noted, you know, a great number of people are uninsured in California, and the problem is not going to get any better until there's significant action. That requires participation by all parties.
We will leave it at that for the moment. Wait till next year. Michael Shaw with the National Federation of Independent Business, Assistant State Director. Anthony Wright with Health Access California. Good to have both of you with us.
Thank you very much.
I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to podcast this program, visit kcrw.com and click on KCRW A to Z. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
Or Manali back with Reporter's Notebook on Which Way LA. Today's New York Times has more details on a story that could impact the LA Times. Once owned by the Chandler family, which is now the largest shareholder in the Tribune Company of Chicago. Tribune has put the LA Times and other assets up for auction, but there has not been very much interest, so the Chandlers might be forming a consortium to buy some of those assets or start a bidding war. Andrew Ross Sorkin wrote today's article in the New York Times. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Do you read this as opening the possibility that the Chandlers might once again buy the Los Angeles Times?
I think that actually is a distinct possibility, but I would caution that it's not because they desperately want to own the LA Times and desperately want to be publishers and are doing this to be the benefactor of the LA Times, the way I think some people look at a possible buyer like David Geffen or Eli Broad or Ron Burkle. But I believe that if they proceed with this, they would be owners of the LA Times strictly for their own economic benefit.
So, in other words, then, the Chandler family, despite Harry Chandler, who has written otherwise and seems to be kind of a black sheep in this context, they're looking to make more money.
I think they're looking to make more money. I don't think they have any real interest in the newspaper business anymore. In fact, I think they're not particularly infatuated with newspapers. And to the extent they could get out of this business, they would. But I think what's happened here is they see that this auction is not going well. Remember, they were the ones that actually forced Tribune to put the company up for sale, expecting a treasure trove of private equity folks and others to emerge. They have not. And now they're looking at what can we do to either create some value, and this may be one way to do it.
Tribune has a lot of assets, newspapers, television stations, all kinds of things that would seem to be valuable in and of themselves, moneymakers. Why haven't they, do you think, been able to generate more interest?
Well, there's two reasons. It's not that people are not interested in these assets. These are all prized assets that are terrific assets. The problem is that the Tribune Company is going to want more money for these assets than people are willing to spend. That is the fundamental problem. The other issue, and not to bore you, is taxes, which is that these assets were bought years and years and years ago and have such a low tax basis that anybody who's going to buy these assets are going to spend a fortune in taxes. And so that actually has become a big sticking point for many of the bidders who are considering looking at this asset.
Why weren't those taxes paid when the Chandlers gave up the interest in the LA Times to the Tribune Company?
We could go into a long conversation about tax law, but it's sort of like buying a house. If you buy a house now and 10 years later you sell it for more later, you have to pay the gain. The way they sold the company at the time, they didn't have to pay at the time. And so that is going to get passed on to whoever the buyer is today.
So that then is decreasing interest to
that is decreasing
say the
interest.
Least.
However, one of the most interesting facets of this is that if the Chandlers were to get involved with a consortium that bought any piece of this, they would actually have the old tax basis, so they wouldn't have to pay those taxes again. It would continue to get passed on. And so that is one of the reasons why, if they do get involved, you could see a decent bid for all or part of Tribune.
What would the federal government think about a consortium like this, apparently structured in order to avoid taxes?
Well, I hate to say it, but there are so many deals these days that are structured in part to avoid taxes. So I'm not sure they're going to look any more askance at this auction than they would at any other.
We'd all like to have the same advisors, I guess, that the Chandlers do
right.
In that context, because they have been able to avoid at least this tax so far. Well, in the meantime, what is the industry saying about the LA Times itself, its a chaotic management, people coming and going, the new editor saying that he might not even be around next year? He hasn't moved his wife out from Chicago.
Right.
What does that do to the reputation of the Times as a journal, as a source of journalism, as well as a financial asset?
Well, that's the most troubling part about it, because the LA Times really is the premier asset that Tribune owns and is one of the premier newspapers, as we all know, in this country. But as this auction has dragged on, as the Chandlers have made noise, as Tribune has made cuts, as editors like Dean Baquet, the editor of the LA Times, has left, it has raised all of these questions. The mood in the newsroom from those folks that I know there is dismal at best. And you have to assume that the journalism they're producing can't be much better. I can tell you that when we were, that is the New York Times, were under fire during the whole Jason Blair mess and some of the other things, it was very tough. It was a very tough situation, and I think that while it's not the same type of thing there, there's some similarities.
Major institution in this community. We, of course, follow the its processes with great interest. And Andrew Ross Sorkin, thanks a lot for helping us out today.
Thank you.
Mergers and Acquisitions reporter for the New York Times. Which Way LA, produced tonight by Katie Cooper and Vanessa Romo. Technical director Mike Newport. I'm Armin Alney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.